You've tuned in to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Liebig.
A real gangster plays his cards right.
And Michael Costanzo.
What was that that you just read?
Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Crispy Compact Communique, the 2020 random crazy internet stream podcast, whatever you want to call this shindig. Thank you guys for tuning in on another interesting episode. I am Rich Liebig.
I'm Michael Costanzo.
And we are here to give you some of the very best tidbits in sports, entertainment, and odd news. Definitely a meal for your mind here on the Crispy Noodle endeavor that we call the Crispy Compact Communique. We got some interesting topics to get to in the world of sports, entertainment, and odd news. But before we get to all the news at hand, we'd like to do a little personal bit, let you know what we've been up to. So, Mike, I would ask how you're doing, but your Zoom background is you on fire with the caption, "This is fine."
Yeah, so for those of you on the watching the video, you can see the background. For those of you that can't, it's the dog meme where the dog is sitting in the house on fire saying, "This is fine." But surprise, behind me, you can't see him.
Oh,
it's actually
a cartoon
of Doug Peterson.
It's Dougie P.
Yeah, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. This is great. This is I actually had to look this up to make sure I give proper credit. This is a cartoon from Rob Tourneau, Philly Inquirer cartoonist. This is actually from 2018. So it's interesting how much things have changed since then, isn't it?
Yeah, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. But we'll be getting to that later in the show.
Yeah, right. So other than that, besides the fire behind you, how you doing, Mike?
Other than that, I'm actually doing pretty good. Yesterday, I was down in Ocean City, New Jersey for the day. Took a day off, went down to the shore with my girlfriend. My parents were down there, so we met up. Had some lunch, had some dinner. It was just a nice day. You know, it was surprisingly packed for a Monday at the end of September.
Oh, wait, you went on a Monday?
On a Monday, yeah.
Wow.
And it was like, yeah, surprisingly packed. So, you know, I'm trying to like, you know, we got our masks on. We're trying to like dodge around people. And we're like, man, there's just so many people on this boardwalk. Let's just, you know, walk along the beach. It was nice. It was like perfect weather. You would have enjoyed it, Rich. It was like low 70s. You know, there was a nice strong like breeze the entire time. I was totally comfortable in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. It was the perfect weather to just take a short trip down the shore. So this year I missed out on the big Costanzo caravan vacation.
Yeah.
As you always call it. Yeah. Because of everything going on. So, you know, when my parents are like, "Let's go down for the day," I had to jump on the opportunity and, you know, at least see the ocean once in 2020, you know, maintain a somewhat semblance of normalcy. So I did that. I also played Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 on the Switch. So, you know, both big highlights. Roller Coaster Tycoon, the controls aren't great on the portable console, but it's still really fun to, I love roller coaster and theme park building sims. It's always been, going back to the early days of the first Roller Coaster Tycoon, one of my favorite genres.
Well, so. I always liked Sim City and
oh yeah,
oh, that was so much fun to create your own city and have it like design the road the way you wanted to. And
yeah,
you know, and then you could do some wacky stuff, like, you know, put a school next to a tire fire or something, you know. It was great. So I totally feel you when it comes to those kind of games. I forget who it was, but somebody said those are the games where there is no goal. Like there is no there is no final boss or no achievement. It's just you keep playing and playing and playing until you get, you know, eventually bored of it or something.
You make your own fun.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I like those games as well.
Yeah, they're always a blast. But what have you been up to?
You were out in Jersey. Me and my friends, we did a quick little road trip down to Virginia.
Nice.
It was my friend Kat's 30th birthday, so happy birthday to Kat. And yeah, we went to Virginia and we ate and drank and it was a blast. My belly is still full of barbecue sauce because it was barbecue heaven everywhere we went. And
yeah, there's supposed to be good barbecue down there, isn't there?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Man, I feel like I gained like 10 pounds because like I had either barbecue sauce or gravy on everything. It was,
and then I'm sure all the booze didn't help either.
Well, you know,
that... probably had your fair share of wine and beer. And I know Virginia is known for wineries. I know that from my girlfriend went to school in Virginia, and we actually went to a winery down there a few weeks ago. So I know it's big down there. So I'm sure you guys hit up a few of those.
Yeah. So it was definitely a blast. And man, yeah, the mountains are loaded with, you know, with everything like that, wineries, breweries. It's like I think you could fall down the mountain and stumble into like 10 different breweries just by tumbling down the mountain. So
probably,
yeah.
So perfect for you.
Yeah, it was great. So yeah, it was a great little fun little vacation to do, and you know, relatively safe to do in this you know time of coronavirus, because you know everyone was still doing social distancing, everyone was still wearing the masks, and most of the breweries are stuff outside, so that's fine. So yeah, it was, you know, something that you could safely accomplish, and we did it in like a little road trip kind of a fashion. So yeah, it was really cool.
Nice.
So
that's awesome. So we both took mini trips.
Yeah,
this past weekend.
You went
Monday.
You went east and I went west, which is weird. I would have if you told me like, you know, 6 months ago which directions would be which, I'd probably say I'd be the one going east, because I'd probably go to like AC or something.
Yeah. And I'd be staying right here because I don't go anywhere.
Yeah. You even stay when there's fire in your Zoom background.
This is fine. This is fine. But speaking of things being fine, Rich, let's jump into our regularly scheduled programming into the sports section of the podcast. We have a couple of fun topics to talk about. First, we're not going to get to the fire boiling behind me. Instead, we're going to talk about Lightning. What's Ooh. This I hear about hockey news?
That was a good transition, Mike. Quick little update in the world of hockey. The Tampa Bay Lightning win Lord Stanley's Cup in 6 games in the Stanley Cup Finals over the Dallas Stars. You know, just one of those things to be aware of. Tampa Bay, they always are a perennial contender, it seems like, and they pull off another big Stanley Cup victory this year in the middle of this 2020 crazy coronavirus impacted season. I would have liked the Flyers to have made it a little bit deeper. And then on the flip side of the Western Conference, I would have liked it if it was the Vegas Golden Knights trying to compete for it. But you know what? In the end, the Lightning, they were just they were the hot team at the right time, and they pulled off a magnificent Game 6 victory, winning the series 4-2. So there you go. Kudos to Tampa Bay. They're just a perennial contender. They're always in the thick of things. This is multiple Stanley Cup appearances now within the last 10 years or so. So
it's like a mini dynasty going on here.
I mean, as well as you can do in this sport, you know, hockey's another tough sport where there's a lot of parity. It's very tough to achieve a dynasty kind of a team. So it's definitely commendable that the Tampa Bay Lightning have just always seem to have their best foot in the door for the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it pays off in another Stanley Cup championship for them. So quick little update, you know, just in case you're talking with your friends and you want to throw out, you know, hey, Tampa Bay Lightning, they won the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. And something so that, you know, we have a little bit of time so Mike can breathe in and out, because eventually we have to talk about football. And I don't think Mike really wants to talk about football.
Well, I mean, what's there to talk about? The season ended on Sunday.
Yeah.
for all intents and purposes, I consider the Eagles season over when they tied with the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't just lose to them. They couldn't forget winning. winning is a foreign concept to this team. They tied with the Cincinnati Bengals. They have a rookie quarterback during a season with I got to center myself. Okay. Is it really as bad as it seems, Rich?
Yes. I hate to say it. I hate to say it. Usually I'm the voice of reasoning, but this was a debacle. This is, and the scary part is the Eagles were actually down by a touchdown in the fourth quarter. They were on the verge of outright losing this game. And then Wentz,
a tie an improvement?
I guess, you know, I look, a tie counts as half of a win. We're better than the New York Giants. So that's nice, but it's still pathetic. This Bengals team had the number one overall pick last year. They were the worst team in the league last year, and they improved only in terms of finding their franchise quarterback. That's it. They didn't do anything else, really, to improve their status. Especially
having a rookie quarterback this year should be a negative, though, because there was no offseason.
Yeah.
This is what we talked about leading up to the season, that teams with new coaches or new quarterbacks or new combos of coaches and quarterbacks would struggle. And the Eagles lost to one of these teams.
Yep.
Not lost, tied.
They tied. Yeah, Mike, you have to keep saying that. The Eagles tied.
So I'm pissed. I'm pissed because longtime listeners will know that I think ties are worse than losing, because you're not good enough to win. At least do us the honor and dignity of sucking enough to lose so that we can actually get a better draft pick at the end of this debacle. No, instead we're going to sneak our way to a 7-8-1 record and sneak into the playoffs because our division is terrible. What do we have, like a combined one win?
Let's go. You want to go over the NFC East standings? At the top is the Cowboys and the Redskins at one win and two losses apiece. The Eagles are in third place with 0 wins, 2 losses, and a tie. And then the Giants are at the bottom at zero wins and 3 losses. So actually, the Eagles are
2-9-1 as a division.
The Eagles, no, Mike, I'm going to scare you. The Eagles are only a half a game out of the division.
Sure, why not? let's just win the division at 7-8-1, squeak into the playoffs, and then get blown out by a real team.
That's
par for the course.
It's been done before.
Yeah, by us.
Yeah, it can happen. So, Mike, you might want to be planning that scenario. That could happen this year. Another aspect of this game that really pissed people off was apparently Doug Peterson had the chance to go for it on fourth down with only 12 or 14 seconds left in overtime. So it's almost like you might as well take the free shot because the game's going to end in a tie anyway, unless you complete a Hail Mary or you do something completely catastrophic like a pick six or something like that. This game was going to end in a tie anyway. You might as well try the Hail Mary, but Dougie P decided in an ultra conservative move to just punt it away so the clock would run out and they would get the tie. So yeah, Dougie actually chose a tie to end this game. And he got lit up for this decision, and the most brilliant of rants against this was found on ESPN with the commentator Dan Orlovsky, and we pulled the clip so that everyone could check it out. Mike, you want to play it? Play it?
Yeah, let's play it.
All right, let's play it. Here's the clip.
Orlovsky, what did you think of the decision to punt it?
Yeah, no, duh. It's a terrible decision. It's a terrible choice. I mean, it's 4th and 12. You're playing the team that had the number one pick last year in the NFL draft and a rookie quarterback at home. If you can't beat that team, the tie means nothing. In the NFL, Doug, you know this. It's win or nothing. It's win or nothing else. A tie is a loss. And you had the opportunity to roll the dice. It's an aggressive call. And say, I'm going to trust in my quarterback, who's struggling as much as I've ever seen anyone struggle. and I'm going to trust in my football team because I need to inject some juice into my football team. But you decide to punt and go, you know what, we will just take the tie. The reality is this. 2 years ago, Frank Reich was in this very situation, same situation. And he said, I got to trust my guys to go make this play. They were 1-5 at the time, the Colts were. They go for it. They get it. They end up going on a massive run to make the playoffs. Doug Peterson, where's the guy that called Philly special in the Super Bowl? Where's the guy that went for it on 4th-and-3 in the Super Bowl against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots? I understand your team's playing poorly. To go for it to punt on 4th-and-12 sends a very clear message to your football team that you don't think they're any good.
RC.
And that's a tough locker room to be in.
All right, so there you go. That was the rant there. Do you believe that either on a subconscious level or on a conscious level that Dougie P doesn't trust this team?
I think fundamentally there's something off about this team. I don't know what. I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know if it's play calling. I don't know if it's just the natural waxing and waning of talent on NFL teams. There's something fundamentally wrong with this team, and right now it's not clicking. So I think that it's on some level, Doug Peterson might be doubting. I think so. And I think Carson Wentz is doubting too. I think that, you know, it's no secret that he's really regressed statistically. He's the worst quarterback in the league right now. He's not getting it done, even though we added quote unquote firepower. DeSean Jackson's been non-existent. Zach Ertz has been ineffective. Miles Sanders has been, you know, there, I guess.
That's the best analysis. He's there.
I mean, so I'm just going off box score. I mean, he had 18 carries, almost 100 yards. That's good, but why is Carson Wentz dropping back 50 times a game almost?
Yeah.
You know, why it's almost like they're force feeding it through Wentz to try and get something to happen, but it's not working. Statistically, he's the worst quarterback in the league right now. So if your quarterback is performing that poorly, you have to change things to get things to work. Greg Ward was the leading receiver. I mean, this guy, again, Greg Ward was a hero last year coming in at the end of the season. But when you have players like DeSean Jackson and Zach Ertz on your team and Miles Sanders, how is Greg Ward the leading receiver?
Yeah.
You know, and so fundamentally something is not clicking somewhere, whether that's coaching, whether that's play calling, whether that's the players themselves, something is off. And Doug Peterson as the head coach has to figure it out and fast, because statistically teams that start this way have a 7% chance of making the playoffs. And you know my feeling, go big or go home. At this point, if they drop another one or two games, I'm in full tank it mode, because there's no point. I mean, yeah, we can come back and win the division, but for who, for what?
Yeah.
You know?
And here's another part of the problem that kind of gets lost in the confusion of this criticism of Carson Wentz. He has been making poor decisions, and he has been playing badly and not up to his usual caliber. But there is a large chunk of the offensive line that is just not part of this team.
That's true.
And fundamentally, one of the pieces is Brandon Brooks. I've read a great stat. Are you ready for this?
In
games where Carson Wentz does not have Brandon Brooks, the Eagles have lost 11 are 0-10-1 now with this tie.
Wow.
They are winless in 11 games without Brandon Brooks.
I mean, he's quietly one of the best offensive linemen in the league. I mean,
yeah,
his position, but I mean, across the entire line, he's one of the best. And
yep.
Him, and not only that, but you have the decline, the continued decline of Jason Peters. You know, we're missing big parts of this offensive line. You're absolutely right.
Yep, and it's just stunning any sort of growth that could happen with this offense and with the Eagles in general. So I don't know what to do. It just seems like everything they've been thrown at the wall with Wentz just hasn't been working.
They have to reevaluate how they call games and the types of plays they put together, because whatever they're doing now is not working, whether it's confidence or whether it's the players out on the field, whether it's the play calling, something's not working. They have to reevaluate and fast.
Yeah. And unfortunately they don't have Frank Reich as the offensive coordinator anymore. So good luck. Yeah.
It's the same song and dance every year since after 2017. I feel like we're on repeat. As my Zoom background says, this is fine. This cartoon came out in 2018. It's 2020. So, I mean, this is proof positive that it's been the same story the past 3 years. And I think that's, everyone's like, oh, the hot takes are getting annoying. And I get it. And I'm not one of those people calling for like Wentz to be, you know, cut or traded, or like people would want Foles back, which is never going to happen. People
yeah. Want... We've been getting tweets on that. I guess we need to say this again for everybody that's been tweeting at us about Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not going to happen. Stop. It's not happening.
The Bears just named him the starter. So it's not going to happen. They just committed, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to Wentz. It's not going to happen. However, as my background suggests, there is a real problem. The fact that this cartoon of Doug Peterson sitting in a flaming house saying this is fine was from 2 years ago and is still relevant.
Yep.
I mean, that's saying something. That's saying something. I don't know what, but it's something.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is a dark time for Philadelphia sports, and the Eagles just aren't helping at all. Speaking of dark times, 2020 just continues to throw curveballs, and apparently one is coming for the NFL, and it hit the Titans square in the head, because this week it came out that Titans players and staff tested positive for COVID-19. This is massive. This is the NFL's first taste of dealing with the coronavirus in mid-season. Apparently, all the Titans facilities, all the Vikings facilities have been shut down because the Titans played their game on Sunday against the Vikings in Minnesota. So all of any training facility where Titans and Vikings players were have been shut down. And apparently the NFL is even looking into postponing possibly this game. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
The Titans' next game could get pushed back. I mean, this was always a concern. Football, out of all the sports, I think is one of the riskiest to play. You know, there's contact in basketball, but there's only 10 players on the court at any given time.
They were in a
bubble city.
Yeah.
The NFL is traveling back and forth, 32 different cities, rosters of 50-some players, coaches and staff and stadium personnel. Just the offensive line alone, offensive and defensive line alone, is just as many, if not more, players than are in a basketball game. You know, and they're colliding and tackling. The objective is to run into and jump on and land on and breathe and sweat on other people. So it's a very dangerous, I think, sport to play during a pandemic. We'll have to see how they handle this. There's a big gap in their testing protocols, which is they don't get tested on game day because it would be hard. They can't test and get results back in time to play the game. So it's like the one blind spot, and that's where they got hit. You know, there's no way to tell. So it's right now it's just wait and see. But it's one of those things, like, it could spread like wildfire. And if it does, if multiple games have to get shifted around, then, you know, you're looking at the season either ending early or getting delayed into January and February, which I don't know. I was always doubtful of the season. Mm-hmm. So this right now is sort of like, kind of like a shrug. Like, I mean, kind of expected it, right?
Yeah, I figured at some point this was going to happen.
How do you feel about this?
I figured at some point this was going to happen. I think the interesting thing is just to see how the NFL is going to deal with it, because literally there's a lot of different options on the table, including just flat out switching these games with bye weeks. You know, luckily the NFL schedule has a planned bye week for every team. That's why there's 16 games in a 17-week season. So is this a situation where we're going to see the NFL actually switching bye weeks to deal with players with coronavirus? That's a possibility. And boy, would that be just wreaking havoc for everybody that follows football, fantasy football players, bookies. This is it'll be bedlam.
Always bringing it back to betting.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a reason why football is there's a reason why the NFL is determined to have a full season this year. There is so much money that goes through, you know, the NFL. It's ridiculous. And that includes gambling. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise that this was going to happen, but it could be surprising in terms of what the NFL does to combat this. And I'm interested to see how they respond.
Yeah. A lot of money on the line, like you said. And like you said, they have that bye week built in. So it's definitely an option to shift things around. The problem is that, you know, sometimes symptoms and tests, signs of the virus don't show up until 5 to 7 days later. So you run into this problem, like, yes, you can push it back, or yes, you can make it a bye week, but, you know, it's sometimes hard to stop that wave once it gets going, because now they have to go back. The NFL's going back through the footage of the game and seeing who came into contact with these players and with these personnel, and trying to figure out, like, where those people went, who they came into contact with. And I mean, just think about how much contact there is between officials and players and personnel during an NFL game. So, I mean, hopefully, you know, it stays contained to those 8 people, but it's just a giant question mark right now.
Yeah. And I doubt it's going to stop with 8 people.
Right. Exactly. And it's like, okay, so right now the Vikings aren't testing positive. That's great. That's awesome. But what if they start to test positive later in the week? Or what if more players on the Titans team start to test positive, you know? And I don't know. There's just a lot of question marks. So it'll be very interesting to see how they deal with this. This is their first real test.
Yeah.
The NFL, because for the first, you know, 3.5 weeks, everything has been smooth sailing. But now all of a sudden the wrinkles in the plan are starting to show, which was inevitable because they're not using a bubble city. And the NFL is massive. Just absolutely huge compared to the other leagues. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
It could be one of those situations where this could be, you know, the beginning of the snowball, you know, rolling down the hill. So, we shall see how impacts the upcoming weeks of the NFL season. In the meantime, though, we're going to assume that the games are still happening as scheduled. So, we'll go into our fantastic 4 picks for week number 4 of the NFL season. Let's see, Mike, what do we got on tap?
First up, we got a couple of early surprises. The Indianapolis Colts at the Chicago Bears. Both teams doing very well so far during their season. I believe the Bears just named Foles as their starter. Rich, can Foles take them to 4-0? The Chicago Bears, one of the early surprises in the NFC. What do you think?
Yeah, this is interesting. Because when you throw in a new quarterback, you got to think of it as a new quarterback. I know Nick Foles isn't himself a young quarterback, but in terms of the Bears, he's a new quarterback into their system. You don't have that much to really go on in terms of how he operates within the offense, which for the most part, that's a huge disadvantage. You like to be able to have some game film and know his tendencies and stuff, but we really don't. We really all we know is just Foles just isn't afraid to just uncork the ball, you know, and we saw it in that game where he threw 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and maybe this is what this is the spark that finally catches fire and ignites the Bears team, because they've always been they've always been a team that had a decent defense. But their offense has been lacking a little bit, so I'm gonna go with this. I think the Bears could be undefeated and go to 4-0 in this game. Also, it would be funny to see Foles go up against Frank Reich, who was the offensive coordinator in Philly during that time. So. We lost Mikey there. There you go.
Hey, I'm back.
Oh, there you go. Oh my gosh. we lost Mike. You know, that's how you know this is a real show, folks. You know what's funny? I just kept rambling on and on about Frank Reich, and
you didn't even notice, did you?
Yeah. Well, I noticed a little bit because, like, your face was just blinked off. So I was like, oh, I better keep going and going. So that's how you know this is a real show, folks. Yeah, Mike lost internet connection there, but he's back now. So
I'm back.
My final conclusion was I'm going to take the Bears at home.
Okay. That was going to be my conclusion as well. I have no idea what you said because third world Ambler internet over here decides to just stop. I'm turning around, the router is completely gone. It's just there's nothing there. We had rain in Ambler, which means that everything stops working. I might lose electricity. Who knows?
There you go.
So, yeah, the Bears. I like Foles. I like Foles. I liked him when he was with the Eagles. I liked him when he was with the Eagles the first time. He doesn't have a great record playing on other teams other than the Eagles, but I still like Foles. At 3-0, I think this is an inspired Bears team. I'm going with the Bears at home. Yep. Next up, we have two AFC teams on the rise. The Buffalo Bills are traveling to Las Vegas to face off against the Raiders. It is a 4:00 game. Rich, who do you have in this matchup? I like both these teams, 3-0, 1-2, surprising early leaders in the AFC.
I'm going to go with the theory of don't overthink this. The Bills have a stellar defense. And Josh Allen has been one of the rising stars on the quarterback scene. Some are even making the case that he's going to enter that upper echelon of quarterbacks because he can move around the pocket and be mobile when he needs to be, but he's got the accuracy too to make those crucial throws. Not quite on the same scale as Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, but he's definitely got some legs. He can maneuver and stay mobile, which is going to help his chances in Buffalo. And the Raiders, you know, they're the Raiders.
I'm not totally sold on them.
Sold on them yet. I don't think that they're officially, you know, on the upswing yet in the AFC. So I'm going to go with the Bills on this. I'm going to keep it simple, go with defense. So I'm going to go with Bills on the road.
Yeah, my sentiments exactly. The Bills were good last year, and they're picking up where they left off. This could be their year to take that AFC East division. The Raiders, on the other hand, they weren't so good last year. They're in a new city. I know they had a shocking win recently, but I don't know. I don't know. You know, you have a team that was really good last year, and they seem to be picking up where they left off. So you got to go, like you said, don't overthink it. You got to go with the Bills. They've proven that they can hang in there. So I'm going with the Bills. I'm really liking how they're playing recently.
Yeah, me too.
Next up, again, don't overthink it. You got two AFC favorites, the New England Patriots, traveling to Kansas City to face off against the Chiefs. Rich, tell me why the Chiefs are going to win this game.
Because I am happy with barbecue sauce in my stomach.
There you go.
I'm just going to go with that.
That is expert NFL analysis. Yes. I'm going to go with the fact that Patrick...
Do you really think that was my analysis?
I mean, why not? I mean...
Yeah. No, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, this offense is unstoppable. Did you see I don't know if you saw this. There's one play on Monday night against the Ravens where they had Tyreek Hill lined up as a halfback. And then their fullback was lined up as a tight end. They fake a reverse to Tyreek Hill, get the defense to jump on that. Then Mahone steps back like he's going to pass, but then as the rush is coming on the other side of the offensive line, he shovel passes it to the fullback who was wide open because at that point the defense was spread apart. It's like you can't. This offense is literally unstoppable because the moment you dedicate resources to one end of the field or a specific player, they got another one that they can throw at you and take advantage. This is literally the best Andy Reid offense the NFL has ever seen, and it's just unstoppable. So I'm going with Chiefs.
Yeah, I was going to say Andy Reid and Mahomes in Kansas City is unstoppable. This is this is everything Andy Reid wanted in a quarterback his entire time here in Philadelphia. And now that he's got exactly what he wants, that offense, like, Andy Reid's always been heralded as an offensive genius, and we are finally seeing the full effect of that. Mahomes is, you know, people in the NFL are saying that you could pay him $2 billion, it still wouldn't be worth it. I mean, the talk about Mahomes is, like, just ridiculous. Yep. You can't bet against the guy right now, which is crazy because I would formally say that about the Patriots. But there's a new top dog in the AFC, and it's the Chiefs. And until proven otherwise, they're taking the spot of the Patriots. You got to pick them until something changes. Yep. So, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Chiefs. Yep. Just from here on out, if the Chiefs are in a game, I'm probably going to take the Chiefs, just like I used to take the Patriots.
There you go. Sounds like a good strategy.
You know what else is a given? The fact that I probably won't ever take the Eagles in a pick again after they stung us last week. Rich, do the Eagles have any hope against the 49ers? I don't think they do.
They actually have a little bit of hope because
they tied the Bengals.
Here's why. The 49ers are actually as hurt as the Eagles are. They're going to be without Jimmy Garoppolo for a little bit of time. Their running backs have been decimated. They lost Tevin Coleman and Raheem Mostert for a little bit of time as well. So there's actually a little bit of luck here that favors the Eagles because the 49ers are as banged up. And they lost two of their defensive linemen too. Like, if there's one other team that has suffered enough injuries like the Eagles, it's the 49ers. They've suffered a lot of injuries to big name players. So there is actually a little bit of hope that the Eagles could pull this off. But right now, I am pissed off at the Eagles for literally. I told you last week that was a must-win game, and they just simply tied. And Doug Peterson punted it. I am pissed off at them, so I will go with the 49ers. But there is a chance they could pull that off. It would be funny. It would be funny if this would be the first game that they win if they do so.
I hate to admit it, but you're right. The Eagles historically have always won games that they're not supposed to win. This is a game that they're not supposed to win. But this is the thing that ticks me off this season is everyone's like, oh, you know, it's going to be a tough season. Eagles have injuries, COVID-19. The other teams are dealing with the same exact set of circumstances and they all have wins. The Browns are 2-1. The 49ers, despite the injuries, despite COVID-19, are 2-1.
Not the NFC East. We're special.
Yeah, we are. We're very special, Rich.
Yes.
Special enough to lose to the 49ers. I don't have any faith in the Eagles right now. You know, I know the 49ers might be hurting as well, but I have no confidence in the Eagles. I have no confidence in the Eagles because not only are they injured, but something is wrong with the play calling. Something is wrong with just, as we talked about, the confidence and the trust in the team. You know, Doug Peterson, like you said, didn't go for it on fourth down. He punted it with the game on the line. Even he admitted the day after that he probably would have, if he had the option, put it in Carson Wentz's hands. Why didn't you come to that conclusion during the game?
Yeah.
Something is fundamentally off here, 49ers. Absolutely.
All right, so there you go. That's our fantastic four picks for week four. A lot of fours there. and there you go. That will also wrap up the sports segment for this week. Let's move into entertainment. We've got some interesting entertainment news. One that is very special to me because this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Sacha Baron Cohen, he created the wonderful character of Borat. I guess 14 years ago. Wow. That was, that movie
was so old.
Yeah. But apparently he thinks that now is the time to revive the character of Borat. And it is confirmed that Borat 2 will come out on Amazon Prime the day before the presidential election. And I guess Borat's going to be traveling the country again and going to be up to his ridiculous little schemes and plans and stuff like that. I love Borat. I really do. I think it's one of the funniest movies out there. I don't know if it warrants a sequel, but it's already in production and it's already going to be released and everything's planned. So I'll definitely check it out, but I don't know. Mike, as someone, I guess you were kind of a moderate fan of Borat. What does this scream to you?
I really enjoyed Borat. I just didn't quote it as long as everyone else did, Rich.
That's me. Yep.
But you're right in that I don't know that it needed a sequel either. Comedy sequels are notoriously difficult. Not just that, but we saw that after Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen really struggled to make his other characters' movies work because people picked up on the gimmick. So you not only have the issue of the comedy sequel, but you also have the issue of people are sort of expecting it now. And Borat was so big that people are going to recognize him when he shows up. You would think they would. But don't underestimate the stupidity of average people, which is why I think that this movie, despite everything, might be really well-timed. It's a decade and a half after the original. They're releasing it the day before the U.S. presidential election on a streaming service. This was filmed during the COVID-19 pandemic earlier this year, which adds a whole other twist to it. So just like the first Borat really highlighted certain parts of our society. And I mean, that was where the real humor was, where it's highlighting different parts of America and really making us look at ourselves, you know. There's great potential here, especially this year in 2020 with everything that's been happening, just the wildness of the year. I think it's time for a character like Borat to come back into the picture and once again reveal those less glamorous parts of the country and really, you know, satirize what's been happening. And hopefully, you know, because you use humor to, you know, touch on some of these bigger topics. So I'm really interested to see how it ends up. Probably won't be as good as the first one.
Yeah.
I'm very prepared for it to be lackluster. But I love the title. I love the title, Borat 2. But the official title is Borat, Gift of Pornographic Monkey to Vice Premier Michael Pence to Make Benefit Recently Diminished Nation of Kazakhstan. So you can already tell the direction of where it's going. I'm very interested to see how it ends up. It's coming out on Amazon Prime the day before the election. I think right now, in terms of culturally and societally, we're primed for another Borat.
Well, I'm looking forward to this movie, and I hope it lives up to the Borat 2 moniker. I think it will.
I think it will too. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, I love the first Borat. Here's the thing with Borat that I think either you get or you don't is that. When it comes to these character kind of movies, a lot of Sacha Baron Cohen characters are kind of actually like intrinsically kind of evil, you know. Right. Whereas Borat, his character is actually like trying to be a good guy, you know. And it's just he doesn't know any better. So it's I don't know. To me, like that always like has a soft spot in my heart. Like he's just trying to explore, you know.
He's a lovable idiot,
right? Yeah,
is what it is. Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know. In case you haven't seen Borat, it's been out for 14 years. Go watch it. It's I love it. It's still one of my favorite. Still one of my favorite movies. Has some of the best quotes. Just yeah. I don't need to do any Borat imitations.
No, that's okay.
Yes, thank you. All right, let's get to our main entertainment topic. This is something that we've been holding off for a long time, and we're finally going to talk about it. We both finally finished The Last of Us 2 on PlayStation 4. Is this going to be spoiler? Should we label this?
I, I think it's going to be pretty tough to talk about it in depth without there being spoilers. So if you haven't played The Last of Us 2, skip ahead now to the odd news, because we're definitely going to be jumping into some story details, I would imagine.
Yeah, or if you're watching this live, about 10 minutes.
Okay, there you go. About 10 minutes.
Yeah. Put us in the oven for 10 minutes. Come back and check on us.
Exactly. Wait until we're golden brown and crispy.
Yeah.
Rich, talking about things being done, The Last of Us faced a couple of delays in order for it to become absolutely perfect, for Naughty Dog to put the finishing touches on it. Now that we've both finished it, months after it came out, it took me a little bit longer. Do you think that this game had the perfect, quote-unquote, finish on it that Naughty Dog was looking for? Did it spend enough time in the oven? Or because I know it was very divisive. We're going to get into it. And I know that we have differing opinions on the quality of the game. So was it worth it? Was it worth the wait? Was it worth the time? Was it worth the money?
So
what did you think of The Last of Us 2?
Yeah, so visually, it's breathtaking. The graphics are out of this world. Again, Naughty Dog has this ability to just push pure graphics and pure just visual power out of the console before it is set to retire. And I feel like that's what... just like The Last of Us did for PlayStation 3, The Last of Us 2 did for PlayStation 4. Visually, it's a beautiful game. The worlds that they create, is fantastic, and that part is to be commended. And the gameplay was as intense as the first one,
more so in parts.
Even more so. And there are some moments that you're just I can't believe I'm gonna have to, kill this person or kill this thing. I'm going to leave it at that. So they, in terms of gameplay and visuals and stuff like, and audio and stuff like that, they really hit it out of the park and everything like that.
We don't play those games just for the graphics and the technical aspects.
That's right.
Naughty Dog is known for narrative.
That's right. And unfortunately, there's a big meatball here that I can't swallow in this game, and that is just the ending. The ending kind of just bothered me. I was, actually, to be honest with you, I was in agreement with the way the story was going. I really liked the new character Abby.
Yeah,
I thought I wasn't gonna like her. So we're in spoiler territory. So when the changeover happens from when you stop being Ellie and the game transitions to Abby's character, I thought, oh God, I don't know if I'm gonna like this. It was too much. It was like, oh my God, a whole new character, a whole new faction, a whole new part of the city to deal with. Also at that point she kills off Joel, which that decision is still a little bit to me. But you know what, after giving her levels a decent and fair playthrough, I was starting to like her character as well. And then the ending happens, and it just the fact that they just kind of let it be all of a sudden. It's like Ellie just stops, stops in her quest for revenge. I don't know. That totally just zapped all of my enthusiasm that I had at that point in the game out of it. So that was kind of the thing that left the biggest sour taste in my mouth. Also, other than the fact of killing Joel right off the bat, that was a tough decision to make as well.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm in complete agreement with everything you said about the technical aspects of the game. Naughty Dog once again top of the class. I mean, everything, at this, like you said, the sound, the graphics, the gameplay, from a technical standpoint, the two things that I kept saying over and over again as I was playing through is, you know, this game is surprisingly huge and detailed, and I didn't realize that was possible. You know, enemies would do things I wasn't expecting. The environments were designed in ways I wasn't expecting. The audio worked in ways. It was just constantly surprising me. And Naughty Dog did that with the narrative as well. And I think this is where we differ, where I think some of those chances and risks that they took, I sort of took them in stride. The Joel thing was definitely shocking, but I sort of expected it. I knew that he was going to have to get bumped off at some point. And so I don't think it hit with as much weight for me when it happened. It was definitely a shocking moment, but I was sort of like prepared for it. I knew that Ellie was going to be the main character going into the game. So I knew something had to have happened. Something had to have happened to make her go on this revenge quest. The only thing that I could envision was Joel getting killed. So I put two and two together and figured at some point something's going to happen where Joel gets, you know, killed off.
Yeah, but there's also the way he got killed off as well.
What about it? Was it the nature of the kill, or just the way that there weren't any clear answers to what was happening?
Kind of both. Because that also plays a little bit of frustration into as you're playing the game, you know, dealing with everything that happens. But then also just in an actual story point of view, in the grand scheme of things, his death doesn't really have any, for lack of a better word, purpose, you know, it just happens. And
I think so. That's the interesting thing, because I talked about it at length with the reason I was delayed so long in finishing the game is because my girlfriend was in Tennessee for work. And we talked about the game at length while we played it, because she watched me play through the game. And one of the conclusions that we came to is that, much like the first game, the themes of this game are meant to not only challenge us, you know, mentally and emotionally, but like challenge the nature of narrative. And so one of the major themes is that there is a pointlessness to the violence. The two characters, and I really enjoyed the parallel of Abby and Ellie, because they're both on this revenge quest. And at some point, Abby realizes that this revenge will not give her what she's looking for, will not bring her that peace. Whereas Ellie, she can't get to that point, because Abby's able to find things to live for and fight for, and Ellie like blatantly ignores all these things that she has. And she's so driven and tunnel visioned on exacting this revenge that she loses sight of the things that she does have, you know, where Abby literally had everything taken from her. And I'm not trying to make Abby seem like the hero, you know, far be it. I mean, she's just as bad as Ellie. But one of the classic themes from the first game is we're actually playing as a quote unquote, you know, Joel's not a good guy. Joel is sort of a bad guy from a different character's perspective. From Abby's perspective, Joel is the villain. And in The Last of Us 2, I think Ellie is the villain. I think we're playing as the villain. And I think it's almost like a Breaking Bad thing where they're testing, see how far we'll follow this bad guy, how far will follow this main character. People always conflate protagonist and good guy. The protagonist isn't always the good guy. Sometimes the protagonist is the bad guy. And in the end, I mean, when Ellie has that spoiler for the ending, and when Ellie's about to, you know, slit this kid's throat, you know, in order to get Abby to fight her, in order to, you know, provoke her into attacking so that they can have their final fight so that she can kill her and get her revenge, you can see at that moment, everything is gone. Every aspect of Ellie that we knew and loved from the first game is gone. There's nothing left. And so it's a game about that loss, about that, the pointlessness and the the sacrifice of seeking revenge. So I appreciate it from that perspective, but I absolutely get the divisiveness because it does end on such an empty note. It was hopeless.
So it was bleak. So you went on about how Ellie gets focused on the revenge and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So then why doesn't she take the chance to kill her at the end? Why do they all of a sudden?
Because she realizes that it's not going to bring Joel back.
But they've gone too far. Like she's already slaughtered at that point in the game hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Like she's already past the point of no return. This is the part I can't square, because she's already made it past the point of no return, and now you're telling me all of a sudden now I see the error of my ways and now I'm not gonna finish the job off. I felt that was a massive letdown. Somebody should have died. Somebody should have died between the two of them. So that was very frustrating when that happened at the end of the game.
I definitely get that. And from a certain perspective, narratively, it does seem odd that she just decides not to go through with it. But I think at that point, I think she was just tired. You're not buying it?
No. No, there's no reasoning. Like, be tired, but the last 10 guys before you killed or something. Like, you can't get to the mountain and all of a sudden not plant the flag. You know, like, come on. Like, she earned the righteous kill in that moment, and all of a sudden she's gonna be like, oh, now I see the error of my ways before the 100 people she slashed throats. But before to get to that point, it's...
Well, because I think she saw a little... Hold on. Why can't people come to revelations at the 11th hour? I mean, she's looking at Abby. She has her right where she wants to, but Abby didn't even want to fight. Abby was like, just kill me. There's no satisfaction. You see, this is the thing. Ellie has become a monster. She needs Abby to fight back. Otherwise, the revenge has no meaning. She realizes it's meaningless.
If she's that much of a monster, then she needs to kill the bitch and be done with it. Like, this moment of revelation can't happen at that point. She's past the point of no return. She needs to be in it for a penny, in for a pound. She's past that point. You can't all of a sudden retroactively go back and be like, oh, now she has a heart, or she's tired, or now she... We've already elevated her to monster level. You can't all of a sudden just go back and try and retroactively kind of have her find, you know, faith or whatever you want to say it is.
I don't think that's what it is. I think that she realizes that it won't be satisfying.
But it's still kind of... You kicked it into overdrive, you know. You can't put that back into the case, as far as I'm concerned.
So let's play it out. Let's play it out that way. She does kill Abby. Hmm. That's also not a satisfying ending, because she kills her, and then it's still the question is for who, for what.
But at least that concludes the journey that she was on in the game, and actually provides a conclusive ending to that, to this chapter. I
fundamentally disagree, because I think everybody gets caught up on the revenge aspect of it, and they're missing the fact that the story is really still about Ellie and Joel. And they have those flashbacks because she's remembering, and you see this contrast between who she was and who she is now, and the fact that she never squared with the final conversations she had with Joel, the anger that she had towards him, and the fact that they were on the cusp of making things right again, and she never got to see that to fruition. So it's almost like unfinished business. And then she realizes that killing Abby is not going to complete that unfinished business. It might even do the opposite, that nothing she can do will bring him back. So the kill lacks satisfaction. The unfinished business is still left unfinished. So what purpose is there? It's not redemption she's looking for.
No, the purpose is pure revenge and pure evilness.
It's not about, but that's the thing. It's not about revenge. She thinks it's about revenge, but it's really about the unfinished business. She feels like it's been taken from her, and she's going to do whatever it takes to try and validate how she thinks she feels about Joel. Like, this is how I can show how much I actually cared. Because if you remember the flashbacks, they had a schism, and then they were on the cusp of repairing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so she needs some way to like make sense of that in her mind. And she realizes that killing Abby is not going to make sense of it. It's not going to bring him back. It's not going to make sense of it. It's not going to redeem her. It's not going to do any of these things. So killing her would have been just as unsatisfactory. I think the point of the game is that it's supposed to be unsatisfactory. It's supposed to be the pointlessness of revenge. It's supposed to be she lost everything in the pursuit of something that was unwinnable.
Yes, but also in terms of a video game story, you do have to put a little bit of emphasis on what the player is feeling as well. And as somebody that, you know, really loved the first game and really loved Joel, that's also a factor as well that you also, most people that played this game wanted to have that revenge as well. And for to have that taken away, it didn't sit right. Personally, I think for Ellie's character at that point in the story, it doesn't fit her character. And just overall, I think it's the worst way to have an unsatisfying ending to that game. I think it would have been, or at least the game would have, I think, gone over a little bit better if Ellie at least had the satisfaction of killing Abby and getting revenge on Joel, and then doing all that self-searching kind of, you know, what did I kill for, all that stuff afterwards. But in terms of just, and that's another thing too, it just stopped the story all of a sudden when I think she actually like drops the knife or something, like it just stops. Like, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but like the fight like gets more and more violent between the two of them, and yeah, it gets more beat down and more button mashing. Like, you're actually putting effort into this, and all of a sudden it just stops. Like, it didn't mesh at all, in my opinion.
Well,
and
see, that was actually effective for me, because at that point in the fight, I was going like, I'm in my mind, I'm like, I'm done fighting. I want this to be over. As a player, I said, I see no point in this continuing. They're both going to beat each other to death. They're both going to die. And then it's going to be the biggest middle finger ever. You know, it's going to be mutual destruction. And mutual destruction is never satisfying. So at that point, I think they did a good job of having the gameplay literally tire out the gamer and be like, all right, it's time for this fight to end. I guess it's just a fundamental difference in how we view the characters and how we view their journeys. Because for me, I don't think that killing Abby would have given me satisfaction as revenge for Joel. Because having played the first game and having replayed the first game, I am firmly in the camp of Joel is a villain. You know, from a different perspective, Joel is the bad guy. We see him as the good guy because we play as him. But we slaughter tons of people that are enemy only in label of the fact that we are an active participant in it. But there are other groups of people fighting for, you know, their own, as David puts in the first game, you know, I'm feeding women and children and, you know, it's, you know, you slaughtered my men. He did. Joel slaughtered his men. Joel openly admitted to Ellie that he's been on both sides of those hunter traps. Joel killed, as we saw, several unarmed doctors who were trying to save the world. And Ellie as well never forgave him for that for the next decade of her life. Five, 6 years, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So
her adolescence.
Yeah. He took a very selfish approach to all these things. That is not a hero in my book. And while I still liked Joel and cared for Joel, by the end of my second playthrough of the first game, I was like, I get what they're saying. Like, they, you know, pull back the sheep's clothing and Joel is a wolf. He's not really, you know, the knight in shining armor. He's just a regular dude, and that's totally fine. So when Abby sought her revenge, I saw it as, you know, it sucks because I liked Joel, but it was validated. And so playing as Ellie seeking that revenge, I was torn because I wanted her to get it. But at the same time, I was like, I mean, Joel kind of had it coming, you know? No, I mean, really, like you can't be the bad guy and not expect to have a target on your back. And it's I found it a very nuanced approach to storytelling, because they do blur those lines between good guy and bad guy and protagonist and antagonist. And I'm firmly in the camp of you're playing as a villain in the second game. You know, it's that she's not a hero. She's a villain. And it's challenging the way that we view the hero villain dichotomy, challenging the way we look at these moral lines. And I really liked it. I thought it was effective. I thought it was effective in showing the contrast between who Ellie was and who she is now. And I thought it was really bleak. I thought it lacked any sort of hope. It lacked any sort of, you know, you're right. It was unsatisfactory to, you know, I think that was the intent, to be unsatisfactory, which I think is part of my criticism of it, is that it was this bleak, hopeless, like, I do agree with that aspect, and that it just sort of ended. And while that was effective for the tone that they were going with, I can definitely see how that caused divisiveness, because
that's another thing too, is unfortunately this medium of being a video game, unfortunately, you want to have some satisfaction at the end of the day. You did
right.
pay, you know, a substantial amount of money to play this game. So while you may chalk that up to being artistic and stuff like that, that's kind of a bigger letdown for a video gamer. You know,
I'll say this: the interactivity does confuse it. Like, yeah. if this were a movie, I think we'd all be like, "Cool, I get it, and I don't mind it." But you're right, because you're physically in her shoes. Because if it's a movie or a book, that's her story. That's like, she makes her decision, and we just have to accept it, because people make irrational decisions.
Yeah.
That's what makes her real. That's what makes her fully realized. Like, that, what you say doesn't make sense, doesn't jive with you. People do that all the time. So I'm like, cool, that's your story. That's your decision. I'm going along for the ride. But you're right, the interactivity confuses the whole thing, because it's not just her story and her motives and ideas and irrational decisions, because you're sitting there with the controller going like, no, kill, kill, kill.
Yeah.
And you can't. So I it's one of those things where video game storytelling, the interactivity helps, but then sometimes it also, if you're not thinking along the same lines as the character, definitely does cause that clash. And I totally get that, you know, you're looking at it from the interactive perspective, like I am Ellie, whereas I'm looking at it as I'm watching Ellie's story.
Mm-hmm. That could be a big difference in how you perceive this game.
I think so.
Unfortunately, we got to leave it there because we went over on that. Sorry about that. We went more closer, like 15, 20 minutes on that. So sorry if anybody zoomed ahead that. Sorry. The cookies weren't ready out of the crispy noodle oven yet.
No, but they're well and truly baked now.
Yes. And especially since we got to get to some odd news. Of course, we got sports entertainment, and our last bit is odd news. And for this week, we are going to talk about a true Bible thumper.
Oh boy, this should be interesting. All right, what do we got?
A burglary suspect hit a cop in the face with a Bible, which led to his tasing and arrest on multiple criminal charges, according to a police report. Oh, by the way, I jumped over the fact this is Florida.
Who is this effing guy in Florida? It's Florida, and they're crazy.
Of course. Good old Florida. The alleged Bible thumper was named Robert Otis Hoskins. He was collared Tuesday afternoon following a confrontation at a residence in Summerfield, which is a suburb outside of Ocala. He is charged with burglary, larceny, resisting, battery on a law enforcement officer, and general criminal mischief.
General criminal mischief.
Yeah. Very interesting.
I've never heard that one before. I like that.
Yes. Police responded to a 911 call about a burglary. They encountered Mr. Hoskins, who was only wearing a pair of gray briefs outside his residence.
That makes sense.
So there you go. It's hot in Florida. Just go down to your skivvies. That's all you need.
He wasn't naked, which is saying something for the odd news.
That's right. Actually, by odd news standards, that's tame. He's got his underwear on. Come on.
There's nothing wrong with this. He's not naked. He's not actively masturbating.
Yeah, he's tame.
Yeah.
As the deputy began to question Hoskins, that's when Hoskins began shouting at the cop and then grabbed a book in his right hand and threw the Bible at the officer, which hit him in the face.
Bibles are like big and hefty. Like,
yeah. Does Jacksonville need a backup quarterback? Because this guy is pretty accurate.
Right.
Nailed him with a Bible in the face.
That is accuracy right there. So I have a question. Did you say they were outside? Where were they?
They were outside. So was he outside his house?
So he was walking around in his boxers with a Bible.
Yes.
So he had the Bible with him. Okay,
yes.
Because I was wondering where he got. So he was just, that was just his normal routine. He's taking a stroll in his underwear, reading the good book.
Yep.
Praise Jeebus and all that.
Yep. Being one with nature and God.
He's a spiritual guy. He's just trying to get closer, like you said, to nature and God. There's nothing wrong with this. He's a holy man. He is practicing his faith and he just wants the cop to know.
That's it.
He was trying to show him a passage that he really liked. He just got overexcited. The book slipped, hit him in the face. I see a very easy out for him here.
Well, unfortunately, this next bit might stop you on this, because according to the cop, he said, "I condemn you," after he threw the Bible at him.
Wow.
I condemn you.
I didn't realize he had that power to condemn people like that.
Yes. I condemn you. I have the Bible. And I have a direct hit on you. I condemn you. After a brief struggle, Hoskins was taken into custody, and he was also tased in the takedown. Wow. So he put up a fight.
He was throwing Bibles. So, yeah.
Hoskins' wife reported to the station and told police that he has a drug problem.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah. Par for the course.
Yeah. This is pretty typical day in Florida.
Yep. Apparently, Hoskins told cops that God told him that he needed to go into his neighbor's house and meet his neighbor's daughter.
Oh. I missed that part in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's a bit alarming.
So I wake up in the morning, I have my boxers on. Oh, I got a call from Jesus. I got to go see my neighbor's daughter with this Bible right now.
I mean, look, everybody does it. You wake up. What's the first thing you do? You check your phone. And there he's got missed call from God. Oh, man, what does God want? Check the voicemail. He's like, yo, go check out the neighbor's daughter. You got it, God.
Yeah.
You grab my Bible.
And you got to do it as soon as humanly possible because you don't have time to get clothes on. No time.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
Timing is of the essence.
Look, Rich, God calls you, you answer. You don't lollygag.
Yeah.
You don't dwaddle. You go.
You don't have time for clothes. Come on. Chop,
right,
chop.
Exactly. Yeah, right?
Chop, chop. Get going.
He barely had time to grab the Bible.
That's when cops arrested him. He's being held in jail in lieu of a $13,000 bond. And, oh, are you ready for this? I hope this shows up. Because apparently the cop was wearing a body cam.
Okay.
So they have a photo of him actually throwing the Bible. Oh, I don't know if you can see it. No!
Oh, no. Wait. Oh, my God.
Can you... I don't... The zoom background is
oh, wait. Right
out.
There. Right there. Don't move.
Yeah. Can you see
there
it?
There you go. Yeah. It's very bright, but I can just make it out. He's like... He looks like a quarterback.
Yeah, he's got good posture.
Yeah, it's like a perfect freeze frame. He's just like in the windup. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, he's also scrambling out of the pocket too.
He's scrambling out of the pocket. Yeah, he is. Look at that. He's in motion. Yeah.
If I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I might be interested in this dude. Call him up.
You know what? What'd you say his bail was? Was 13,000?
Yeah. That's
Jags have got that.
Yeah, come on. That's a rookie minimum.
Yeah, pay to get him out, bring him in for a tryout. Why not? What do you got to lose? Nothing.
Yeah, I'm with it. So there you go. That's our odd news story for the week. Before we wrap this episode up, I don't know why I couldn't talk that. Apocalypse activities. Mike, what do you have?
Okay. One of my new favorite activities to do, because I've done everything entertainment wise, is go on Amazon Prime and watch terrible movies and just rip them to shreds. So my girlfriend and I watched Killer Bees and Ants on a Plane on Amazon Prime. They were both equally terrible, like really, really bad, terrible.
Okay.
And it's just fun to watch bad movies. And did I ever tell you about VelociPastor?
Maybe.
So VelociPastor is the worst movie ever. Like, okay. So you have to trust me on this. You have to watch it. It's about a priest. Both his parents die. So he goes on a spirit quest to China, where he gains the ability to turn into a dinosaur. A prostitute then teaches him how to use his dinosaur shapeshifting abilities to fight crime. And he becomes a priest and velociraptor crime-fighting person with a prostitute sidekick.
Of course you would find that movie. Of course I would, yes. Thank you, Mike.
So there you go. Bad movies on Amazon Prime. They have there's bad movies everywhere, but Amazon Prime has really... Like, if you dig deep enough, they've got some really weird stuff on there.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend Killer Bees, Ants on a Plane, and VelociPastor.
All right. And my apocalypse activities is Last Week Tonight with John Oliver is back. He had his first episode this past weekend. I highly encourage you go check it out. And he's back on Sundays on HBO. So... make sure you go check him out every Sunday. I love that show. So figured I should give everyone a general reminder that he's back in case you forgot.
Yeah. Always good stuff.
Yeah. Always good stuff. He just won the Emmy for best. I think like this is now his fourth Emmy in five years or something.
It's a lot.
Yeah. He's got a lot of Emmys in the short time span he's had that show. So
yeah,
definitely worthy of the awards. But for right now, we got to wrap this episode up. We are well past our hour. Thank you guys for tuning in and listening or watching us, however you're consuming our crazy little show. If you like what you heard, make sure you go to our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure you're following us on all the social media stuff, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, YouTube, all that crazy shenanigans. Find us there.
Sure. Like Rich said, you can get the video versions of this podcast on YouTube, but you can also get the audio versions on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. So make sure you're subscribing to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on the podcast service of your choice.
That's right. Do all that fun stuff. Make sure you also follow us on Twitter. I am at Rich Liebig, RICHLIEBIG.
I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo. Make sure you follow us there. You can also send us sports, odd news, or entertainment stories that you want covered or anything really, and we'll give you a shout out, talk about it. We'll take it all under consideration.
That's right. Yeah. So tweet at us or leave a comment on the video, anything, let us know. And if we use your suggestion, we'll give you a nice crispy noodle shout out. As well. So, leave a comment below or tweet at us. But for right now, we got to start wrapping this up. This has been the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. Mike, anything else to add?
Nothing from me. Everybody have a good week.
All right. That'll do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys
later. Bye-bye.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
I'm Robert Waters, and this has been the Crispy Noodle 2020.